Okay. We'll go ahead and call all the board members to the front, and we'll begin our meeting. This is the April 8th San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees meeting. Welcome, everybody. The first thing I'll do is mention that in closed session, we discuss labor negotiations and also the superintendent's evaluation. And that the first item tonight is to ask if the board wishes to change any of the agenda items, or is there a consensus on the agenda items? I had one I thought I'd suggest. I don't know, Russell will help me with this a little bit. I was thinking under action discussion, maybe it would be better to discuss the 2008-2009 district budget before we had a discussion about revenue enhancement strategies. Is that okay? I mean, it's not a big deal, but I figured that would kind of set the stage a little bit more for the financial issues. If there's no disagreement, then we'll put 9 in number 8 and 8 in number 9. And with that, our work's done. Good night. No, just kidding. Separate for next. Okay. So we've got our agenda set. And now approval of minutes. And I think the minutes of March 17th, 2008 was an expulsion hearing that I couldn't make. And I would ask the other board members to go ahead and make their motion regarding that and second and go from there. I have to abstain.
I move approval of for the minutes of March 17th, 2008.
We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Ms. Dickinson. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And now the minutes of March 18th at the regular board meeting. Well, that's thank you for being here and doing this again. I know. Okay, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for everybody too who may not know you?
You sure?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Terry Main, and I'm here from the Teach Foundation. And you'll recall we were here recently to let you know about our winter 2008 grant recipients. I'm pleased to announce we have one additional award, and this is for Del Mar Elementary. They had made an application to us for $1,000 to fund a cartooning class with Pulitzer Prize nominee Joe King. And at the time we considered this grant, we were told there was the possibility that there was another community organization that might want to fund this. We had told Del Mar that if that funding didn't come through, that we would approve their grant. And so at our recent board meeting, we did. So we have one more additional grant in the amount of $1,000 to Del Mar Elementary. Okay.
So. Is there somebody here from Del Mar? To
Janet Gould was going to be here, but I don't see her, so that's fine. Okay. She's aware of the award.
Okay, Terry, thank you. And for everyone who wasn't at the last meeting when the other awards, the other fundings were provided, you could see that in the agenda list, and they were quite extensive. Thank you, Terry.
Yes. So we'll be seeing you again in the fall.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Mr. President, if I could just add and make announcement to the public that this followed $10,000 worth of grants given in early March, as is stated in the agenda. And just want to recognize the Teach Foundation as one of the really genuinely committed volunteer organizations dedicated to supporting public education. They play such a vital role. I'd love to just give them a hand for what they do.
Thank you. Next, I think that Dr. Valentine has a presentation.
Well, it is my pleasure, and it will not be my presentation because others far more capable are going to do that for us. But each year we have the pleasure of honoring a single citizen as the Phi Delta Kappa Lay Citizen of the Year award recipient from San Luis Coastal Unified School District. This is a reward which historically has reflected the absolute most dedicated individuals to children in our community. I'm pleased to announce our own John Spiderfor is an alumni of the PDK Lay Citizen of the Year Committee. But this year, I'm pleased to announce that the school district receives nominations from all of the sites, and there's discussion and very spirited discussion about the contributions that volunteers have made in the particular year of the award. And it's a very, very difficult decision to make. But this year's nominee came forward from the Smith Elementary site, and you may see a gang of people out in the audience who looks sufficiently, or suspiciously, I should say, well-coordinated out here. And I'd like to call Amy Shields up to come and do the honors and name the recipient, if I could.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Valentine.
Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Great. The area of housing was very insightful for the committee. Rosanna is the kind of person who takes on the big jobs and makes them look easy. She has brought our yearly walkathon to new heights, both in money earned and school excitement generated. She headed our hospitality committee for several years, providing monthly luncheons and treats for all staff. I don't mean just baked potato luncheons. I mean three-course gourmet meals served on beautiful platters in a decorated staff lounge. Rosanna, if you've ever been to, well, which all of you have, our amazing playground, single-handedly, was responsible for securing over $30,000 worth of private donations to purchase our amazing fitness center. She then served on the playground committee of students, teachers, and parents to select just the right type of equipment. About 5 years ago, you remember, Russell, when our categoricals took a dive. Lucky for us, Rosanna was the president of our PTA at that point. She helped us fund over $8,000 worth of things for our school improvement plan because we didn't want those things to go away, now funded by PTA. Did I mention the talent show? For the past 5 years, Rosanna has coordinated and directed our school talent show involving weeks of practices and rehearsals. She initiated special fundraisers to earn dollars for additional lighting and sound equipment. What makes Rosanna so incredible is the fact that she does all this. She gives all this time and energy, not just for her two beautiful daughters. She does what she does for every child at the school. She helps each year organize and decorate our third grade Thanksgiving play and feast. Rosanna hasn't had a third grader in 3 years. Rosanna is always in charge of organizing healthy snacks during STAR testing time. In fact, 2 years ago, she thought, let's begin a program making healthy snacks available for students who might come to school hungry. Rosanna has arranged and paid for our sixth grade trip this year to Hearst Castle. Last year, she arranged a fifth grade trip to visit the Monterey Bay Aquarium. She researched and was able to get discounted tickets for us. I believe it was 2 years ago, she organized for our entire fourth and fifth grade to attend the Tall Ship field trip. Now, if any of you have ever been on this, you get on the big, tall trips, you go out, you have some fun. Well, no. As the two teachers tell this story, they were out on the ocean and the boat was rocking a bit back and forth. Over half of the students and apparently both the teachers became seasick and were throwing up over the side of the boat. Not Rosanna. Rosanna was the only adult left standing and busy, of course, holding children's foreheads and comforting them while they were sick and telling them it was all going to be okay soon. This is a true story. Rosanna is now equally involved at Laguna Middle School. She supports the band program through volunteering and helping the band director coordinate fundraising efforts. She chaperones at student events. She is currently serving on their school site council and parent advisory and is, guess what, organizing the eighth grade end of the year party. But there is more to this amazing woman. She volunteers. Congratulations. Okay. And now I have this beautiful plaque for you from the San Luis Unified Coastal School District Board of Education. Recognizes Rosanna Medeiros as our esteemed Phi Delta Kappa Lay Citizen of the Year for 2007 and 2008. And in addition, we also, they have your name already on the plaque, the perpetual plaque, which I believe goes up in the superintendent's office, sure. It's some very prominent place, so congratulations, Rosanna.
So I think right now we'll take a short break and everyone can participate in part of the celebration for Rosanna's contributions. And we also wish to thank you, everybody can individually and have some cake and share that. But thank you so much for everything that you've done. I mean, it means so much to the schools, to the children, to have people willing to give all their time and energy like you have. And I want to admit that this year's recipient is much more accomplished than some of the past. But thank you so much. Are we ready to go back on? We're good. So we'll resume the meeting. He's ready. I know there's somebody who's always ready to keep going.
At San Luis High campus with a gun on campus and with an incident in Morro Bay High. I don't mean that all the school's children are violent. I don't mean that at all. But there is a lot of violence in our society. And I think everyone could benefit by hearing this wise and witty man. I'm giving the board his book called Life Enriching Education. It was recommended by Dr. Thomas Gordon of the Parent Effectiveness Training. And I'm also giving a cassette tape that's called Expressing and Receiving Anger Compassionately. For more information, you can Google nonviolent communication. It's also called compassionate communication. But when you Google nonviolent communication, you'll see a free video of Dr. Rosenberg, and also resources that you can buy. I must admit, my husband and I have taken a class in his course, and they have a trainer, and we use his video, and we have discussions and sharing and so forth. But my husband chose not to go on Saturday and said, why don't you buy a video? So I bought a video, several books. I really bought a lot of things because I found him a very effective speaker and a person who I could connect to and could teach me a lot of ways that I could communicate more effectively. So here's a couple of examples. Raising children compassionately. These are the ones you can read in the bathroom. They're shorties. Being me, loving you. There's a whole list of resources for educators, the Giraffe Classroom, Communications Basics, Making Life Wonderful. That's the intermediate course. Those are four videotapes. The Surprising Purpose of Anger, Teaching Children Compassionately. These are resources that are in the back of the book that you can see and think about. If you find him that you choose not to have him, he has worked with school districts, San Francisco School District. He was raised in Detroit. He said he was raised in an area with lots of ghettos and lots of riots, and he felt there has to be a better way than that. So he went to Berkeley and developed this this course. He's gone to Palestine to work with people trying to get the Israelis and the Palestinians to be more understanding of each other. He's gone to Bosnia. He's worked for UNESCO and many other organizations. If you choose not to have him come and or can't schedule him, I think it might be helpful to have his videos available for teachers, principals, and staff, and the parents as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carol, for bringing those also, those items to look at. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else who would like to speak during public comment? Mr. Bedrigan?
Hello, Board. Bruce Bedrigan, President, Teachers Association. I just wanted to reiterate what I said at the last board meeting concerning keeping the board minutes the way they are.
Received correspondence from Russ Rayburn at Monarch Grove Elementary School, and I wanted to acknowledge receipt of that and thank him for taking the time to write to us.
Okay, thank you very much, Marilyn. Next are the reports by school staff, administrators, and or board members. Are there any particular reports? And I understand that, Mark, you're going to speak to the ROP program separately. Okay, so any other board members, staff, or administrators?
I have a really quick one.
Adrian?
I had the privilege to be at the Performing Arts Center today and hear Shidara Taiko, Japanese drummers and flute players and dancers. And I noticed Hawthorne Elementary was there in full force, too. And several buses from San Luis Coastal. It was wonderful. And my students loved that.
Okay. Thank you for that. Any other reports? Walt.
Normally, I wouldn't take the time, but I just wanted to acknowledge Russ Raven's letter. I thought it was very thoughtful, and I appreciate it. And I also wanted to acknowledge Bob Huddle's poem. Mm-hmm. Was it the Thursday Tribune in the
section? It was Sunday, maybe?
Sunday on poetry. It was just a beautiful poem about teaching in high school, Slow High, and I appreciated it, and I think others did as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Walt. Mark.
Okay. I'm going to do this as quickly as I can. I wanted to thank everybody that was able to attend the private reception that we planned for the governor outside the Tribune. I had the opportunity to be called out of the reception line and spend some time talking to his chief of security. So the governor's request was that he really wanted to be able to use the front door at the Tribune. He has a habit of going around through side doors if there's protesters. And among our 50 people that were there were small children, so I wasn't sure what he was scared of. But if we promised not to cross a certain line, security would allow the governor to go through the front door. So that was all very interesting, and he was quoted in the papers saying he wished he could be out there with the protesters. So I'm taking that to be a sign that, Russ, he's made a compromise on the budget and everything's fine. No, okay. But it was a good experience. The website that's up, SaveSlowCountySchools.org, has had 482 hits in the time that it's been up, and we haven't really even advertised it yet. So if you haven't looked at it, I would really ask you to go look at it and use it. It's a really easy way to reach all the newspapers, all the legislators, and the governor. I want to thank administration. Following the revelation about the gun on campus at San Luis High School, I went to both the high school websites and noted that there was no anonymous tip line. There's a couple of them out there in the world that allow students to use an 800 number to call in and anonymously make a tip. And it's my understanding that the administration's almost or is working towards putting an anonymous tip line in place. And so I have put it in place. So I want to thank them for that really prompt response on that. According to the FBI website, the anonymous tip lines are crucial in helping to stop violence on campus. I also had the pleasure of attending open house at both Hawthorne and Pacific Beach, and the cookies were...
Saturday morning, and just see old junky computers lined up and getting rid of that stuff. So that was great. And finally, I just want to recognize Mr. Buckman. He talks about the Slo County Schools, SaveSloCountySchools.org website. That was the creation of Mr. Buckman and Ms. Plourd, and that's giving us a direct way to talk to the to send our message, whatever message you like, to the media and our local legislators. So thank you, Mr. Buckman.
Thanks, Chris. Catherine?
Thanks. I just wanted to acknowledge the district for providing transportation for children throughout the county to attend. And these are children who have never been to concerts before, and they were able to attend during the school day on Monday a Slo symphony concert for children, the children's concert. And afterwards, the conductor, Michael Novak, said that that is how he made up his mind to become a professional musician, is because his school class was taken to a concert when he was a young boy. So that the district provided transportation was an incredible gift for those children. It was along the lines of the Del Mar fundraiser. I wanted to thank the fifth graders who, with the help of Morro Bay artist Susan Stevens, created this fabulous kitchen table that I was lucky enough to bring home with me. And I thank them for that. You'll have to come visit. Thanks.
Thank you, Catherine. And I also just wanted to mention that people who are watching this later, almost every teacher from C.L. Smith was here tonight to honor Ms. Medeiros, even though her children weren't in their classes, because she has touched every teacher there at the school in terms of her generosity and work, and a terrific example for the kind of volunteerism that we have in the district. Any other? Seeing none, Mr. Miller, we'll do the state of the budget.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, still not a whole lot going on in Sacramento in terms of movement towards a budget. We're still waiting for the May revise, May 15th. The governor will discuss any changes that he would have in his proposal from January based upon the measurement of any revenues the state has or change in heart that he might place in front of the people. There has been some Republicans that have put together a series of bills that are in front of the legislature right now. And one of them calls for some flexibility in using carryover from categorical programs, something that school districts would like to see, because the carryover amounts are unspent budgeted money that in the next year would become available for unrestricted expenditures. There's also a bill that would place a lower percentage on routine restricted maintenance. At this time, we put 3% of our expenditures into our routine restricted maintenance accounts as a condition of being able to access state building money. And while that is not necessarily a bad thing, it is sometimes over the top in terms of what districts can afford. So you end up putting money into maintenance and cutting educational programs. So the legislature is looking at perhaps cutting that 3% to 2.5% or 2%, which would be a substantial reduction in restricted allocations. There's also a bill that would set aside the obligation of districts to perform mandates if the state's not going to quality in terms of the ability to put together a statewide data system, because while they have tried in the past, it has not ever matched the intent of what they want to do. We have a brand new system called CSIS, which apparently they're willing to put aside in favor of having another data system come into being. And
whatever happened to SASE?
SASE isn't necessarily what they have. SASE is a local attendance program. This is a statewide database where every student's basic data is put in front into a database, and then it's measured in terms of the overall. Nice. So it's a rather huge project, and on the scale of things, it far surpasses the size of the Los Angeles District payroll system. So we'll see how they can do with this one. If they can't do the payroll system, I don't know what they're going to do with this one. But it's a good idea. I just don't know if they'll ever be able to get down to it. Other than that, there's not a whole lot going on in Sacramento at this time.
Could I inquire?
Yes, thank you, Russell, and Walt, certainly.
Thank you. I'm sorry about blurting out. This is a two-part question. The first part is the piece in the paper today or yesterday. Oh, sorry. All right, guys. Where it was basically debunking some of the popularly reported funding levels for California schools and how it ranks with other schools in the country. And my two questions are, do you have, and don't feel like you have to have, any comment about the accuracy and applicability of that kind of analysis? And secondly, is it being rolled out to provide political cover to really do a hose job to public education in California?
Yeah, if I could, one of the statistics that, and we've put it out too, is that California is ranked 47th out of 50, actually 51 territories and states. And the qualifier for that statistic that is put out by School Services of California is that happens when you adjust for regional costs of living and costs of doing business. That when those factors are all leveled, we wind up 47th, and when they aren't leveled, we wind up 29th.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. And well, there was going to be an answer, and then we'll go on. But there was an answer to part two. It has something to do with hosing.
Yeah.
Chris had a question.
I'd like to just further comment on that, because we saw it. Mark and I were both at a meeting yesterday with Dr. Crocker, and some of the things that the Education Coalition has said about those figures that were trotted out by the Census Bureau were that the figures included money toward, I believe, state retirement, state teacher retirement, for example, and PERS retirement, which would inflate the figures. It also included categorical monies as well, and categorical money is not evenly distributed across all school districts and across all students in California. I think it's fair to say that. And the other thing, finally, is the notion that, okay, great, so we're, what, 26th? And, you know, most people would like to have better than a
response to Dan Walter's column, and kind of takes it piece by piece, fact by fact. Chris has done an excellent job. We'll also be adding a piece on why public education is so important to local businesses. As the San Luis Chamber of Commerce takes a look now at its stance and their trip to Sacramento, they're going to highlight thus far the closing of the parks and not look at the schools, although Chris and Dr. Crocker will be meeting with the chamber, I believe, Thursday morning, to try and change that direction. Mr. Walters loves numbers because he can make them say whatever he wants.
Okay, Mark, thank you. And Mr. Miller, was there anything else in terms of the report?
No
questions?
Sir.
I just have one.
Marilyn?
I'm hoping that I can slide this in under maybe legislation, because I'm not sure where the question actually belongs. And I think maybe, Russell, it's not a question for you, but rather for Dr. Matakovich. But I saw recently in the paper, and just as I was walking by, didn't read the article, should have, and I apologize for that. But I believe it appeared that there was recent legislation that will not allow special ed students to pass the high school exit exam with accommodations. Am I understanding that? Could you elaborate on that a little bit, please? I'm sorry, I know I'm catching you totally off guard here, but if you have any awareness of it or know more than I do.
Well, I'll be happy to get you the details. I would not feel comfortable speaking to that right now.
Okay, could we hear a little bit about that maybe in Friday packet?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Are there any other questions for Russell or any other comments about the budget item? Mr. Buckman on the great RLP program.
Right.
That we have.
I am hoping that Karen Lopez, who's our representative to the regional board, regional directors, will help me with this in the future. So I feel a little uncomfortable, but the reason that I asked the board, and I'm thankful to the board for allowing us to have this on the agenda following each RLP meeting, is that RLP in whole across the state brought in a great deal of more revenue when Los Angeles Unified School District missed a deadline and didn't file some paperwork, and so millions and millions of dollars were dumped into the system. What it's meant for San Luis Coastal is, in the past, we had a cap of about 130 students, and that cap is now increased to over 150 or more. And if we don't use that cap, if we don't have those students enrolled, 150 students, we lose that money. And that money is substantial. At the beginning of this year, we thought the district was going to get about $500,000. And in fact, as of the last report, the district's received $800,000 from the RLP program. There's a new course being offered next year that'll be fashion merchandising. Is it Lisa
Wasmuth,
who'll be teaching that class. The district also has purchased.
But they talked about how it is not just students who are not going to college who need career, who need practical skills in ROP classes and do take them. So it's broad spectrum.
There's
participation.
Yeah, it's. When you look at the courses that are being offered, there's a lot of science classes can meet their requirement, both CSU and UC, through the ROP program. And the classes tend to be more hands-on, so for those children that learn better through that modality, the ROP classes are a much better way to go. So you're right.
Thank you. No, I know students who've taken those courses who work during the summer while they go to college because it gives them a trade or another bit of experience, so it's important for a lot of different reasons. But thank you, Mark, for bringing that to the board and for reporting on that. No more questions. Any comments from Mark? Okay. I think that Mr. Robinette has items 4 through 7 regarding the negotiation proposals for CSEA and SEIU and also the reopeners on those for those two groups, please. Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. And I don't know that I need to stand up for all four of those items. I'm happy to if you'd like. But we do, under the Public Employee Relations Board guidelines, we need to sunshine publicly when we are going to enter negotiations, both on behalf of the bargaining unit and on behalf of the school district. So we have the need for 4 public hearings because we are anticipating entering into negotiations with California School Employees Association, Chapter 89, and Service Union Employees International, Local 620. So, okay. Here for public hearings.
Okay, and that's on both of those bargaining units?
Yes.
Okay, so it's open now regarding those negotiated items, and any comments or any comments by the public? Okay, seeing none, then we will close those items at this meeting. Is that the way to proceed? Okay. 4 items, 4 through 7 with CSEA and SEIU. We're going to do item number 9 next, which I believe is Mr. Miller again, who's going to talk about the 2008-2009 district budget and overview.
Thank you. Checking. Okay, we're back. It's that time of the year again when we start to develop our budget. And the board tonight is being presented with some very preliminary fiscal information that is by its very nature premature, but only premature in that we don't know what the actual outcome is going to be, but not even premature in terms of we have to do something. We've got to get a budget developed. We're going to be more or less forced into making some presumptions and some estimates, which by their very size and nature are going to perhaps be not exactly correct when the final numbers are known. But I don't think much is different this year than it's been for the last 20 years in terms of working with the state and how it has been tardy in its own development of its own.
And the amount of encroachment, for example, for special education. I was wondering if the amount of our encroachment has gone up due to the program transfers from the County Office of Education to the district?
No, actually it's gone down.
Okay.
Because the encroachment before had a we had the excess cost calculation that the county would give us, and the difference between the excess cost calculation and the amount of additional money that the district is absorbing based upon its absorption of the programs, there's a difference at the moment of about $150,000.
And then also on that page, it says lease revenue at Morrow Elementary is going to be reduced. What's going on at Morrow Elementary?
The County of San Luis Obispo has vacated its lease or rent agreement at Morrow El because of its own budget issues. They're consolidating all of their staff into one building here in San Luis, as opposed to having the auxiliary offices in Morro Bay serving the Morro Bay community. That's their intent as of July 1st. So we will be losing substantial lease revenues as they had a whole wing of the buildings.
On page 9.3, and the top figures, where we look at the second interim revenues versus the 2008-2009 projected revenues.
Correct.
Some of those figures are lower than what we've seen in the second interim, and I know we don't book things until we actually get them. For example, the lower fees, the lower figures we're looking at for our federal and state revenues, are those because of we haven't booked the stuff yet, or is it because of projected reductions?
Good question, and the answer is both.
Okay.
Okay, there's some knowns here, and one known is that we're going to take a hit of some 10% in terms of categorical funding, and that's been deducted.
Okay. Is that deducted off the federal or the state or both?
From the state program.
Okay.
And in also within the state program, we're making an assumption, which we'll get to, I think, in here, but I'm not sure if we delineated it. We're making an assumption that should the governor's proposals go forth, then the basic aid districts such as us will have a fair share of pain.
Right.
And the calculation for our fair share of pain is about $1 million, a little bit, $934,000 to be exact. But we've made that assumption in this budget, too. So there is a calculation for that. On the federal level, that's a matter of not booking a couple of programs that we know will be shorted a bit, and there is, at this moment, no continuation of the MA program, and there's a special ed cut in funding, too. I think there's one other one. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, and I think there's perhaps a little bit of optimism on the MA front. I had a chance to talk to Lois Capps's legislative aide, and it seemed like they were maybe a little bit more optimistic. So when we look at the reductions, we're talking about a 10% cut in what our fair share, which would be what revenue limit districts are facing, in addition to cuts in the categoricals.
There are two cuts that are coming.
So we're going to look at two cuts. And then the last thing I'm curious about is under our restricted side, if we look at the second interim and our projected budget.
Because we have to close our books with unspent money finding its way down to this little box.
Great. Thank you very much, Russell.
Let me go back to page 9.1 and just delineate some of the highlights of our assumptions. First one is enrollment. We are going to estimate our enrollment to be 6,870. In this particular year, our CBEDS count was 7,005. This is a continuing decline. And it amounts to 135 students on a year-over-year basis. Staffing. Budget projections at this time represent a staffing allocation consistent with 07-08. The class size reduction program is expected to remain at the 07-08 level. We are going to assume a staffing ratio in K-3 of 20 to 1. There's a staffing ratio in grades 4 through 6 of 28.5 to 1. and we give allocations of teachers and staffing to grades 7 through 12 on the basis of 31 students to 1.2 FTE teachers. We're not assuming that that's going to change. However, should there be a larger than expected hit to our revenues by the state of California, that might be an area that the board would consider, and it'll be brought back to you certainly as an idea. Other assumptions: due to declining enrollment, we will have 3.3 FTE reduction. We know that's going to happen. So we'll have about a 3.3 less teaching positions, representing a savings of $274,000. We have expected retirements, and right now it's somewhere between 24 and 30 teachers. And that retirement will generate a savings of $600,000 to $700,000 based on the idea that retirees make a larger pay than the replacements that we hire to put in there. So there'd be a savings to that. Do you have a question specifically?
Well, I was just wondering, and I was going to save it for a second, but could it be that the saving under the first one with the declining enrollment is also rolled into the second with the retirement? You don't really see it twice?
Yeah, we're keeping that separated so that you don't see it twice. There's no expectation to decrease our allocations of custodial, secretaries, library media, noon duty, or grounds crews. The encroachment or support from the general fund to restrictive programs will be in excess of the 07-08 allocation. We have budgeted for the amount to remain about the same in 08-09 as 07-08, and we will adjust the amount when more solid information becomes available. So expectation, and then the budget, and we know we're going to have to adjust that one.
And now Chris, and then Dr. Valentine.
One more question. When we talk about a possible savings of, based on the retirement of 24 to 30 teachers, and we guess what those amounts would be, is that amount based on a first-year teacher, or is it based on the sense that we usually hire, 7 to 10 year teachers with 7 to 10 years of experience?
That's where we're estimating our beginning salary will be at 7 years of experience.
And then I missed Mark because I didn't see that live, but go ahead, Mark, and then Dr. Valentine.
Okay, I think it's
okay. Go
ahead. It's probably better than a summary. So,
I just wanted to make sure that I understand Mr. Spadafore's question before. The 3.3 retirements results in a savings that counts X amount of dollars that Russell just declared, and then the 24 retirement
floats through our district, and it started years ago at the kindergarten, first, second grade, and now it's making its way into the secondary. So the easy answer is, if that bubble is the only bubble that occurs in the next 3 years, then eventually we'll reach an evening process. But there's always the opportunity for a new bubble to emerge in the kindergarten, first, second grade levels, which will then produce its own declining process.
Are we seeing it in particular areas of the district? Is it mostly on the coast? Is it mostly in the city? And where I'm headed with that is, Are we looking at the possibility of having to close another school, or are we about where we're going to be for the foreseeable future?
You know, closing another school is a process that involves more than just the declining enrollment. But at this time, I'm not sure that we have an easy answer for that particular piece. We see that what happened in San Luis might be happening in Los Osos, which you'll probably follow what's happening in Morro Bay. So it's kind of a district-wide item. Certainly San Luis saw it first, and then Los Osos can see it now. You can see the declining enrollment at Los Osos Middle School, but the enrollments at the two elementary schools are pretty strong. So we'll see what happens.
Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I think the demographic study that we commissioned some time back, and I think it probably needs revision based upon the current economy, demonstrated the potential for some growth or at least maintenance of enrollment in San Luis Obispo, and with possible growth in the south end of San Luis Obispo, but steady decline through 2011 in the coastal cities.
Okay. And
one of the big issues about that demographic study was that at the time it was done, the housing market was strong and progressive, and the southern section of the city had three major housing developments planned for it. Certainly, those are no longer necessarily on the drawing board. They might be on the drawing board, but they're not in the process of going forward. So, as Ed says, I think that they're... Before we get too deep into the analysis of closing schools or making predictions about what the next 5 years hold for our schools, we certainly would want to do another demographic study.
Okay. And Chris?
And I was just going to ask that same kind of the same question Walter was thinking, I think, is at some point then in the future, it sounds like we need to consider another demographic study based on at least current land values as we know them and projected land values.
One of the things we're doing with looking at our developer fee schedule and the ability we have to raise it now based upon the change in the state law was to look at the demographic component of that developer fees, what they call a developer fee justification report. So we would look at both pieces together. Sometimes you separate them and look at them individually, but I think that we might want to look at these things together based on the current housing market. Finally, the amount of the encroachments or support for each program that we're assuming we're going to need to budget for, and this is based upon the number of students and salaries that we would have, is class size reduction, ninth grade. With federal money, we have to kick in an additional $622,000. Special education preschool is $92,000. Our special education in general from the state funding sources is $2.6 million. School safety program, $52,000. Home to school transportation requires a commitment of $1.1 million from the general fund, and major maintenance, that 2-3% piece that I talked about in our legislative update, we are required to kick in an additional $216,000.
Quick question.
I think we have a little Walt go first, okay. And I'll get you because he was waiting patiently. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is it appropriate to ask, is there an encroachment from NCLB?
NCLB isn't a specific program as much as it is a requirement to us to perform to a certain standard. The answer is yes, because it takes general fund money in order to meet the standards established by NCLB.
Right.
We might adopt different standards. We might adopt different directions for our general fund money to go if NCLB didn't exist. So the simple answer is probably.
Well, one of the issues raised by a letter that we all received was what about the issue of opting out of NCLB? And it occurred to me that we wouldn't really be able to even consider that unless we knew what is NCLB doing to us as far as arguably encroachment versus the federal funding dollars we would lose. But I doubt if it would be anywhere near a wash, but thank you.
Okay. And then I think Dr. Valentine had a comment on this
issue.
Well,
the only thing I would put in there is that the amount of mandated testing in order to demonstrate adherence to the standards and meeting the bar that's been set is no longer optional and therefore is a mandated cost. Now, I think we would have testing costs whether or not there was NCLB, but the fact of the matter is there is no way to not test. And then all the processing and the purchasing and so forth of the tests is an expense. But fundamentally, you're right. It wouldn't add up anything close to what the federal funding would be.
And Adrian?
Mine was just a really quick question on that special ed. The encroachment from the federal requirement is $622,000. So what does this mean exactly, special ed general? I can understand the difference between preschool, but...
Well, the special ed federal program is the workability 94-142 program.
Okay.
And that requires $622,000. Everything else,
yes,
besides workability and preschool requires $2.6
million. Okay, so that's workability. Got it. Thanks.
I'm sorry, I need you to define workability, please.
I'll defer to Chris or Adrian on that.
What does that mean, Adrian?
I'll take a stab at it. Workability is a program that allows students who are special education to actually go out into the community, work for a wage, and make some money and get job experience.
That's as I understand it also.
It's a really cool program. It's a very specific program, but the program pays the wages, so these employers get a worker, and they don't have to pay the wages. And the students do some volunteer work. It's not paid.
And so they're entitled to a reassessment of their property taxes. I don't know what the consequence to our district is for that. Within the county, there's 1,800 homes that they are estimating are entitled to that blanket reassessment, and we'll see what the impact is. But for the purposes of which we're performing our budget at this moment in time, a 2% increase has been established. The expenditure assumptions are fairly straightforward. Salaries are budgeted at the current level of the 07-08 salary schedule. Health and welfare increases are expected to increase by 8%. Workers' compensation insurance premiums have declined by 25% from 07-08 to 08-09. It's a substantial amount of money. It's $250,000. Liability insurance is expected to increase by 20%. Utility costs will be 5% higher. Fuel costs will increase by 10%, and that may be, I don't know if that's overly optimistic or essentially pessimistic, depending on your measurement standard, but for lack of a better idea, we're going with a 10% increase at this moment. And the lease revenue at Moore Elementary, as previously discussed, will be reduced.
There was a question that Walt was asking by what percentage?
Yeah. There, one further thing just to let you know is that we've established a process with the principals. It starts today, and we'll conclude in a number of principals' meetings about prioritization of their budget priorities. And if you take a look at how, from a principal's viewpoint, what are the programs, what are the spending habits, where are the reserves that they would most like to see put into play in terms of budget reductions. So if you're given the idea that as a principal you can construct a model that would cut $5.5 million as an amount, what prioritizations would you use in order to get to that moment in time? And there was a lot of discussion today, 2 hours worth of discussion and a prioritization process divided into different principal groups, the elementary Title I, elementary not Title I, secondary, classified administrators, administration, and I think that was about it. And the curriculum council is the second step. We will go in front of the curriculum council. We'll do it a little bit differently in front of the curriculum council. Instead of having a $5.5 million nut, we'll just say, what programs amounting to $1 million would you prioritize for reduction? And the idea there is to get a consensus idea of what our groups within our community are thinking about areas that the superintendent would recommend to the board for potential budget reductions should we have to cut stuff. And right now we don't know if we're going to have to cut anything, but the potential of worst-case scenario is at least being talked about, and the worst-case scenario for us would be if the legislature decided to put all categorical programs into the revenue limit of other school districts. So, in other words, an example would be class size reduction K-3. We receive over $1 million worth of funding from the state.
The board members got a copy of this. Maybe I printed this out from what you emailed. And it is 4.5. I actually went through this and kind of played with it myself. It's an interesting and very difficult assignment.
It is.
I thought on one, just this is not too important, but on the emergency resources, they talk about lottery, which is 1 year arrears, is around $1 million. I'm just thinking in times of economic stress, that might almost double. People are going to go out and buy lottery tickets. So that, just keep that in mind.
Could.
We get a whole million that way.
Yeah. By far and away, the principal's favorite choice was anything that had reserves attached to it. Okay, they were not in favor of cutting any programs whatsoever. Duh.
Understandable. Okay, Dr. Valentine?
Just piggybacking on that comment, though. One of the things, one of the cautions that we put out for the folks looking at that is that while the reserves are very attractive and frankly may play a very significant role in what ultimately comes forward to the board in the form of a recommendation, that only buys time for 1 year. And at the end of that 1 year, all of the problems that that money was supposed to address reappear at the end, only they reappear at the end without reserves to address them. So,
sure, Adrian?
And besides the principals and curriculum committees, who else gets to do this activity?
That is who would be doing the activities, but the curriculum council has teacher representatives from every single site, and they and their site administration are asked to receive input from the site, and they have the same things you have, and to bring that into that. It's a committee of 30 to 40 people, probably.
Is there any way that people in the district could recommend or whatever that some other entity be involved in this process if they wanted to be involved? I don't know who that would be, but necessarily.
Certainly.
Marilyn?
Dr. Matakovich, are we anticipating any new curricular adoptions next year, the following year, that you're aware of?
Right now we're in the process of looking at a math adoption, K-12, and we're just reviewing the materials at this time, but we're really on hold in terms of our instructional materials plan to establish what our budget will be for the future. So
potentially we could hold off and not make any major adoptions next year or the following year if we needed to?
Well, as you know, we have a multi-year plan, and we try to follow the cycle as presented by the state. And at this time, we're moving forward. We move forward with our science adoption, and mm-hmm. now we are in the beginnings of our math adoption. And so we will anticipate moving forward with it. However, we have to determine if the monies are available. Lottery monies add into those adoptions.
Okay.
One of the elements of one of the bills I didn't talk about in the legislative update was to delay the implementation of the adoption cycle by 24 months. So it would give a 2-year window of no adoptions, giving us some budget relief and a time patch to this potential problem if it happens.
Thank you.
And then Dr. Valentine, then Mark.
Sure.
Yeah, the question on instructional materials. The first thing that needs to be cleared up is that if there were a delay or a skipping of an adoption, would those dollars be usable in some other area of the district budget? And if it isn't, then there's still some benefit to doing it because, frankly, we don't get enough money to buy the materials that we have to, and it might be relief to have another year of accumulating funds. But if they could only be dedicated to the purchase of instructional materials, it really wouldn't help us with our problem. And the second piece is the categorical backfill issue. And I think Russell said it well, and that is that to whatever extent categorical programs are cut, one of the decisions that the board will need to make and that certainly in developing the recommendation for the board we would have to make is how much general fund money do we want to put into those programs that are currently supported with categorical dollars should those categorical dollars disappear.
Mark?
Yeah, I'm hearing us do what I think public education does really well, which is we really try to solve problems for the state, especially when it comes to budget. And we're sitting here saying, gosh, you know, if we delay the adoption and we can use the money for other things, or if we delay the adoption and we have some extra time and we can save that money and put it aside, what we're really saying is if we delay the adoption, we're cheating our children. We're on a cycle that replaces textbooks. Is it every 5 years or 6 years? It's a 7-year cycle to replace textbooks. 7 years. In 7 years, children's textbooks, I know what mine look like, are hardly usable. They're behind the times, and I think we should be sitting here saying, we need to find a way to fully fund public education so that we can have a 7-year cycle where kids get textbooks. And for us to sit here and say, gosh, that's, you know, that might get us through because we're supplanting it, what I'm really hearing you say is, over the years, we've taken it in the shorts on the textbooks, and we're willing to take it. And I don't want that to be go unanswered. And I'm sorry, I'm not arguing with you, Ed. I just think that it's wrong.
Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to meet with a group of folks. In fact, Mr. Unger was there, too, who was we were meeting with Senator Abel Maldonado. And one of the things Senator Maldonado said, and I think it's interesting and frankly supports what you're saying, Mark, and that is that legislators are seriously considering building greater flexibility into the budget. And he I don't think I'm putting words into his mouth, he cautioned us too much to not be too eager to trade real money for flexibility. And thank you. Now we can spend it. And we can spend all this much less money any way we want to. What we really want is money.
Appropriate funding for the goals set out for our public education system. Any other questions?
It's clear along the lines of what you were saying, Mark.
Well, you know, everybody has comments on that, but I was thinking that's part of what we should be doing at strategic planning, is by saying these are our goals and these are the reasons why and this is where we're going to put the funding, and they're tied. But I hope that should be what we're looking at all the time. I don't know how the others feel also.
And that we put a dollar figure to it so that we all know what we're talking about, that this is what we want to do and this is what it's going to cost, and then we try to hold it up against the budget.
Because part of the budget building, which Russell can comment upon and Dr. Valentine can comment upon, is you do put dollar figures with your strategic planning and what your choices are. I'll turn it over to the experts, though. I'm not. Dr. Valentine.
Well, I'll just jump first, and Chris, you may be resonating with this, that the state's adequacy study and the state of California has commissioned a multi-million dollar study to sort of put a dollar amount on what it would cost just to meet the expectations of a solid education. The figures came out in a huge range that ended in the trillions, but at any rate, it's an interesting exercise no matter what the dollar amount turns out to be.
Okay, then Russell, and then Chris.
Very cool. Well, I was just going to say this is what your comment is kind of an interesting segue into the one of the next things we want to talk about, which is revenue enhancements. And when we talk about revenue enhancements, one of the things we have to talk about is how would we spend money and what would our priorities be? So,
I think that as we, and I was just going to say the same thing. It's a great segue to the next item, but framing it in the idea that the way that education is funded in the state of California is very constrained in what you're able to do with your own free will and what you think you want as a community. They talk about local control, yet the amount of money we get, 85% of it goes to salaries. The other 10% of it goes to cost to open the doors. Then there's 2% that has to go into mandated costs that we don't get reimbursed for. And finally, when you break it down, there's such a limited amount of money available for free choice items that the amount of time in the day defines what you can do with free choice items. And there isn't a whole lot of flexibility for us. Yet, having said that, the true driver of this whole issue is money, and that would segue into item number 8.
Perfect entree. But before that, are there any other questions, or we will actually move into the item that was before this that's now after it. Russell?
Okay. Item number 8, the board has asked for us to report on a couple of items which are grouped into the common concept of revenue enhancement. And the board has been very big in the last few years on anything that enhances our revenue and sources of revenue. So we've been engaged in producing revenues in excess of our property taxes, which is our primary source of income. And the board has directed and supported many of those efforts to produce these revenues. As of the 2006-2007 fiscal year, the last period of time for which we have a complete set of data for the entire fiscal year, we've realized the following amounts of money from the following sources. We'll receive about 10% less next year. Old Pacheco, $300,000, and Sunnyside, about $50,000. Vicente is a piece of the Pacific Beach High School campus, and we rent out some portables there for $51,000 to county and the County Office of Education. Safety rebates, which is something we earn through SIPE, which is our JPA on workers' comp and safety issues, is about $33,000. We charge out our UMAN rental fees to other agencies, $34,000. Facility fees, the amount that users of our particular fields, gymnasiums, and classrooms pay us, amounted to $186,000 last year. Our MAW money that we earn for promoting Medicaid opportunities for families in need, $411,000. Mandated costs, which we ask for reimbursement for those things which the state mandates we do, but they don't pay us for. We actually earned $550,000 last year. We didn't make it, but we earned it. And then we've gone after a number of auxiliary grants. Career Tech Grant, $175,000. EETT, which is a computer hardware grant, $378,000. And EISS, $50,000. Sum total of those particular revenue enhancement sources, $4.1 million. We've also been engaged lately in improving and establishing infrastructure that would result in savings. A primary example is a new water well at Morro Bay High School, and we'll save an estimated $190,000 on that. We have a soon-to-be-completed fuel station at the transportation yard. This should result in significant cost savings for our fuel purchases. We are currently looking at water wells in Los Osos, solar energy at several locations, and property development on Johnson Avenue property. The boards initiated the above strategies, supported them through their development and implementation. There is an expressed interest by the board to examine all possible options to support our educational programs. Staff presents this information as a foundation for a discussion of ideas that will potentially result in additional resources for our primary mission.
Okay, thank you very much for that introduction. Comments by the board? Chris?
Well, one of the things that when I'm looking at this that I'm thinking about is when we talk about $4.1 million, $4.2 million, some of the things here are, I don't think they're solid revenues that we can count on from year to year. I think we've talked about the possibility of the MAW money going down. We know the $550,000 of mandated costs. You know, what do we say that the government, the state is arguing that the total mandate reimbursements would be $1,000 per mandate for the whole state of California. We know that our revenues at Morro Elementary are going to be declining next year. The home-to-school transportation, the $110,000, offsets some of the money that we talked about before with the encroachments. When we talk about $4.2 million, and I'm going to put it out there. I don't know what other board members have in mind, but I certainly think that would be something we should talk about.
You know, I believe that the discussion is important for a number of reasons. I think the inherent question regarding the revenue enhancement is what value our community puts in the public education for their children and for the community. And I think that's a discussion that we start having in several different areas about the value, the support for what the programs are and what they can become. I believe we all see this, that the funding instability every year, year after year, from the state and the federal government is destructive in the sense that it impacts staffing, it impacts programs. Making long-term plans or goals in those areas becomes more difficult. It affects all the children as they go through school. So I think that being embarrassed or being uncomfortable about saying, we can say as a board, we can present as a district to this community the value of what is provided here to the students. And because we are supported by property tax, I think the question of how we engage the community in terms of this ongoing issue begins at some point and should continue at almost every level that we can develop, because I think it's our job as board members to have that conversation. And whether it means going out to groups or whether it means having more public involvement in our meetings regarding this issue, if we get to places like public support regarding fundraising, where we have quite a few volunteers and quite a few organizations that are already providing money, we thank them for everything that they do. But that's limited because you can't always count, and you don't always know what will become available and how much effort is into that. Ballot measures in terms of the parcel tax or in terms of bonds have taken on this connotation, I think, in many ways, that it's something, there's something wrong with that. That if you mention the word tax, then you have a whole group that rises up and says, you're irresponsible. You shouldn't be asking for that. You shouldn't ask the public to support your public school system in any means. But I think that's the basic premise of how we develop our program here, is because it is supported by parcel tax. It is supported by property tax. And I think that's something that we, you know, shouldn't forget. You know, we're going to face decreasing funding from property tax because of the real estate issue. The real estate issue doesn't necessarily impact the total community support for our school. And I think that conversation about, will a parcel tax replace what's happening with the loss of other assessments relative to property is important to the valuation of that. And I think at this point in time, people who are supportive of public education, people who believe that what's happening with the budget picture in Sacramento, which will never improve as long as the funding model is so flawed, which is really the problem in California, the funding model is flawed, that we'll always have these problems year in and year out. So I would hope that the board feels it's important to begin the conversation and to say, we would pursue everything that would enhance and support and create the kind of
These are basic and core to our educational program, and what would we be willing to do as a community to ensure that we continue to have a solid program?
Mark?
I think this discussion goes a lot to what Catherine brought up, and that's what's the ideal program that we want for the children of San Luis Obispo, as opposed to what we're currently being funded, and how do we come up with that money? And I support Chris's contention that we need to look at least at doing some preliminary work at what a partial tax would do, and there are professionals out there that can do that for us. I'd also like to throw out maybe something that's a little outside the box. We have several closed school sites. We live halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco. We are have some of the best test scores. We have great facilities. And there are organizations, educational organizations, that are looking for places to do their conferences, to do small workshops. And I'd like to throw out that at some point, somehow, we look into, are we a desirable location for that? Will the chambers of commerce work with us, offering maybe reduced rates at hotels? Cal Poly has a whole department that works on just conferences and making dormitories available for conferences. Maybe we can work with Cal Poly. But I think we have the potential of raising funds, and lo and behold, we actually have closed school sites that we could devote the space at to use as conference center. So I throw that out as another possible alternative.
That's a good idea. Catherine?
Oh, I'm happy to hear those of us on the board have the courage to say the T word, as Chris said, because I think that once we can get this into a dialogue with the public, we might be able to frame this differently, which would be, it may be in everyone's best interest, not just the families in this community who have children in the schools, but also everyone who has a vested interest in seeing this community be solvent and each individual property valuable, that if we had the best educational system in the state and we have a school district that draws people to this community, it's a boon for everyone. So we just need to get out there and sell the idea and get feedback from the community and help them understand it in that those terms, and we can have the kind of school district we all want our children to have.
Thank you. Walt?
I was just trying to remember how much we spent on Tramatol and Associates to tell us...
That was $65,000. Yeah,
that it probably wouldn't be a good idea in markedly different economic conditions, where you had a lot of taxing agencies lining up for various kinds of taxes, but we haven't even begun to see folk entities lining up for taxes, fee increases. The conversation is fine, but there are some realities. At that time, Tramatola was undefeated. Everyone they recommended. Measure D in Santa Barbara was one of their downfalls. But at any rate, it's fair support for a proposed parcel tax.
But
you're right. The Tramatola didn't tell us not to do it. We decided not to do it. And frankly, we'd have had no credibility if we did, because, of course, our revenues increased over the next several years.
My recollection was at the time that what I considered the price of a good bottle of wine today per year, we barely got 66% support in dinner out and a pizza, a pizza out with your family for your kids' education. But that's another story. And that was definitely one of the things that when we talked about it was why we didn't do it. I think we were talking $50 a year was the maximum, and we still barely got 66% of the people.
Other comments? Any summation of requests or directions? I think Mark mentioned something, and in terms of going forward with having these issues discussed down the road. I was going to mention one thing, that if there is going to be a further discussion, I think one of the things that the district and the board probably has to consider is putting some framework and structure around what it would look like if this additional funding was present. I think to ask for additional funding and just say it would be nice to have, I think there would be something that would help us when we do our strategic planning and we put costs associated with that, to say these are the things that we can do, but these are all the things that we can't do because of the lack of funding, and then attach a value and then continue that discussion in terms of our strategic planning.
Sort of our own little adequacy study, our dreams.
And then the other thing I was going to mention is that I think that the evidence of what Russell is saying tonight on page 8.1 is the sound management and the responsible approach that the district has taken to the assets of the district over the last several years. I remember years past there was criticism that assets and financial management of certain funds and bonds were not being properly addressed by the district, and I think over the past 7 or 8 years, this is an example of the type of responsible management for assets that the district has in terms of allowing those to continue to provide funds for our programs and our students. And I think that's part of the conversation we need to continue. And also I would ask, just as a final point, besides the structure of what it would look like to have additional funds for programs that would benefit students, is there any benefit to looking, not only as Mark had said, working with the Hotel and Motel Association to determine if there's some kind of partnerships that can be developed relative to using facilities for conferences, which is, I think, there's an association in the county, but also seeing if there are outside property agents who could work with us in better promoting the properties we do have inside and outside the area. And I don't know if that's even something that could be considered. Adrian?
I just have a question just for myself personally on this whole parcel tax issue. Since my daughter now works for Tramatola, she didn't when the district was contracting with them, but she works with them on and with school districts on bonds and developing these parcel tax ideas and
with ideas about what would be the steps we would want to go through to decide, A, if our current revenues are enough and solid enough, and I think it, the board feels that they aren't. Second thing is, if what kinds of things would we need to do in order to have an adequately funded school district for the students and the way we want to see things done around here? How do we get to that point? How do we engage the community? So those are some questions, and I guess I'm not sure how we would get to each of those places and who would do that. So what I would be looking for is a process to start developing out these ideas, and I don't know how to go about doing that. I'm sure other school districts and other people have done it, but I think that would be our next steps if that's what the board has an interest in doing.
Well, that's part of the what Tramitol does, but there's also other people who are consultants who come in to any entity and say, here are your assets, here are your potentials, here are the possibilities of success if you go this route or go that route. So we can either develop it internally and continue to talk about it, or if we get to the point where we're really not moving in any particular direction, we can consider if we want to pursue something, putting more support in that area. And Dr. Valentine?
I can see some advantage perhaps to looking at someone who has internal and external, who has expertise on how do you define the issues that you want to address, and then a second body of expertise to come in, and once that's defined, how do you actually get it? And I think if we break it down into those two things, we probably aren't going to work it out at the table tonight, but that staff can go back and bring back some suggestions on how to do both of those.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a terrific idea. Any other comments? Okay, thank you, everybody. And Mr. Miller, thank you for that. The next item is the cafeteria meal pricing, and we have Mr. Miller returning to the spotlight.
I move the recommendation.
Of this? Oh, yeah, yeah. I think, Russell, there's a motion which will be pursued second in a second.
Well, I support Walter's movement. That was good. Now, we have we have an era of rising prices in all aspects of our operations, and at this particular time, Sue Thorson is our director of food services, and we have had food costs increase, we've had labor costs increases, and transportation costs and movement of the food from site to site. In 2005, food services sustained a loss of $10,000. In 2006, $12,000. And we will anticipate a loss in 2007, 2008. The increases have been 5.6 and 3.6% the last 2 years. And payroll costs have increased 42% of income to 50% of income. Recently, food costs have risen as the food distributors have been unable to hold their contracted prices. A price increase of 25 cents per full meal price is proposed per the following chart. The price of reduced price meals will not be changed. Free and reduced meals will remain. Current price, $1.50, proposed price. The increase in income would be approximately $59,000 per year. And it is staff's recommendation that the board approve an increase of 25 cents for the full price meal.
Okay. You know, I was thinking, and Mark has a comment, Adrian has a comment, but to expedite, well, that's what I'm going to do, to expedite the discussion, if it's okay, Mark and Adrian, is Mr. Millar, you had a motion to make, and if we have a second, then we can have a discussion on the motion.
I move the recommendation.
There's a motion by Mr. Millar to approve the increase as set forth in the item, and a second by Mr. Unger, and I think Mark has a comment, and then Adrian has a comment.
Russell, I'm going to ask some questions, and I'm sort of leading up to something. And the questions I have, the highest cost overrun or sustained loss to date is $10,000, roughly $500. Do you have an estimate for the sustained loss for the coming year?
No, it was $12,500 in last year is the price. In the first paragraph, the last three words?
Yes, I'm sorry, $12,000.
Yeah. And no, I don't know what it's going to turn out to be, 07, 08, but we'll be in excess of $12,500.
Okay. Just to cut to the chase, because it's getting late. If we're roughly going up $2,000 a year, my question is why are we going for an increase that raises close to $60,000? Could we do it more incrementally? Maybe the cost of things will come down in a year. This seems like a big jump in 1 year, and a big hit to parents.
It was based upon the 25 cents. It's based upon the sustainability of the program to absorb wage increases and price increases on its product. And if you take a look at what's going on at the supermarket, you'll know that it's not necessarily just 3% or 6% increases like our wages. Price increases at the supermarket are huge. We're seeing the same type of increase.
And I appreciate that, and I'm seeing it as well. I think milk is almost going to surpass gasoline per gallon. I haven't figured out how to run my car on milk yet, but... but normally, I'm used to seeing from you and your department a fairly careful projection that shows, what we, in fact, everything we've seen tonight. And on this one, we've got this $12,000 overrun, and then suddenly $60,000. Am I reading this?
Well, it's not so much that we want to bring this back to you on a year-over-year basis. We run into a lot of resistance, and it's been 4 years, I think, since we raised prices. Could be three, but I think it's 4 years. And our intent is to be able to raise the prices at a quarter so that it can be sustained for a number of years into the future. We're also looking at rebuilding the health of the food services fund, which has suffered a deterioration of its reserves. It's down to nothing now, and we want to rebuild. Produces 60,000, then 12.5 would produce 30,000.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Adrian.
As someone who has experience in lunch lines, I think all these dimes are a big problem, and I would recommend that. The student lunch for adults be $3, not $2.90, and the student breakfast for adults be $2 and not $1.90. Every Tuesday I get a salad, and the teachers get to go to the front of the line because I have kids in my class I'm supervising, and all these kids are waiting, and I just hand them my $2 and go, and no change of money, and $2.25, quarters are easier than dimes. I think there's a lot of kids waiting in line, so just whatever money's easy to handle. But I I'm recommending that we do $3 and $2 for the adults.
So are you proposing a...
I'll be happy to withdraw my motion so we can massage these pennies all night.
So do you want to, if it's withdrawn or you amend it, do you want to amend the... full price student lunch for adults to $3 and the student breakfast for adults to $2? You have the right to do that. We know that from a past experience. No, well, either way you go, it's going to happen. So I think the question is, Adrian, do you want to go ahead and make it $3 instead of $2.90 and make it $2? Is that a motion? Is there a second?
My preference is, if we're going to start messing around with these numbers, that this come back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that dies for a lack of a second. We still have a motion on the table. Is there any more discussion?
Yes, please.
Catherine.
I don't know if we come back with this, but let me just ask Russell now. I totally understand that the price of food is increasing and that we may, we obviously have to cover the current prices. If we were looking at doing such a larger price, could we also look at including more fresh produce and increasing the quality and freshness and healthfulness of the food? Does this tie in any way? Can we tie it to the quality of the food we're offering?
Well, my initial reaction is that we we do a great job at providing fresh and wholesome food. We've had this discussion as a board a number of times over the last 3 or 4 years, and we've cut the trans fats. We've done all of those particular issues, including offering salads up until this year. Now, this year, the requirements changed, so the salad alone isn't of a characterization to meet the standard, so we have to add different things to that. But the idea is that we're pretty fresh. We get produce shipments every day. We get shipments of all products on a daily basis. So I think that we're doing a pretty good job on that piece of it. I appreciate trying to tie all of that together, but that is part of the reason that we do have a loss within the fund on a current level. This is the quality we offer is pretty good.
And the salad could be brought back. I mean, we could work.
We do offer the salads. Okay, it's just now they have to have something else with them. I forget exactly what it is. Say pizza. Okay, so pizza serves a particular food group need, and then the salad is another food group need. So,
you know, Catherine, we've had full board presentations on
a motion and a second by Mr. Millar and Mr. Unger. Are there any other comments or questions regarding that motion and second at this point? Sure. Chris is first.
You know, I seconded the motion to move the discussion along. I'm going to vote no on it, and not because I object to the quarter, but because I think I've heard some other good ideas here, and I'd like to have those fleshed out a little bit more and have this brought back. And so I'm curious about Mr. Buckman's idea of keeping this of what the student lunch costs are going to be, and I'm also interested in what Mrs. Dickinson is saying about perhaps raising the adult meals and see how some of that might balance itself out better. So I'm going to go ahead and vote no on this motion, but not because I don't think we need to be financially responsible, but just so that we can come back with some other ideas.
Okay. We'll take that vote when everybody is ready. So, and are there any other comments before we take the vote? Seeing no other comments, there's a motion by Mr. Millar to approve this increase as set forth, and a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor? Aye. Opposed?
No.
So I got... Yeah. Okay, so it fails. So is there direction to the administration on what the board likes to have brought back? Is that, Chris, you want to restate that?
Yeah, I would just like this brought back with some different alternatives. Instead of a quarter all the way across the board, I'd be interested in seeing if we can meet our target financial need by adjusting some of those other costs. And that's
for this year or for ongoing years, or are we going to do this every year?
I'm happy to do it for ongoing years. I think the idea of not having to raise prices every year is a good one. And also, I think if we look at the projected costs of food and what we're seeing with food costs, and especially corn, you know, we can expect to see costs rising significantly within the next few years.
Okay, thank you very much. So that'll be brought back with those
got it.
In mind. Thank you very much. Marilyn? Yes.
May I add into that also? could you give us an idea of how many adult meals are served on a daily basis and how many children's meals? So I have a feeling that the adults might be better able to withstand a larger bump, where if you have two or three children in school, even a quarter a day per child is could create some hardship. So I'd like to see those numbers, please.
Thank you. Any other comments before we go on? Now we're going to item number 11, the content and purpose of board meeting minutes. And I wanted to begin by saying I brought this up the last time, and I publicly support the work that has been done and the way the minutes have been provided. I brought it up as an opportunity to clarify what's to be expected, what's necessary, and how we can make something very conscientious in the sense of what we're trying to provide the public, and also that if we have minutes that they're well constructed and we feel comfortable about them, and so we can reduce the rescissions and reduce the time with going through and trying to define sentences and things like that. So that was the reason I brought that up at the first point. But I'm very supportive of the minutes. I think Kim does a wonderful job.
I agree with that. I'm typically, I would say, 99% of the time very satisfied with Mrs. Holmes does. The only corrections I ever usually, I believe the only corrections I ask for are misspellings, or when I, you know, there's the rare error in Mr. Millar versus Mr. Miller's name, or, you know, a date or something like that. I am satisfied with them. Where I do have a problem, though, is when we start trying to wordsmith what Mrs. Holmes is doing. And
I also publicly support what Mrs. Holmes does, and think that our trend seems to be to want to keep them exactly that way, because they've been so helpful and complete, and that's a huge job. It seems to me that minutes for a board meeting may seem to be a tempest in a teapot, but the item shows the board's respect for the work it is elected to do. I want to remind Walter he wanted to talk about this, and I think you're being very patient and open. So I'm staying on my notes. I'm okay. The minutes are history, and history should be recorded as accurately as possible. So I do appreciate how accurate they are. Perceptions about what happened in any situation can vary with individuals, which is the challenge of recording history. This challenge includes determining what happened and deciding what's important enough to be recorded and what should be left out. People experience phenomena differently and see events through their own paradigms. Everyone does this, even when trying to be objective. The perspective of the superintendent's office may not always be the same perspective as a board member elected to oversight of the district. This difference does not diminish the validity or importance of either position. Regarding minutes, offering a correction to the minutes should not be seen as an impertinence. Each correction offered should be viewed on its merits without prejudice. Data. There's been 102 meetings since I've been on the board. Just think about that out there if you're thinking of running. 102 meetings. I open every single one of them on the internet, and it's amazing that we have access to this history right there on our district website. 67 of those were regular meetings, and the rest were expulsions or special meetings. I looked at my own. I'm willing to look at myself and grow and learn. I offered corrections to the minutes 13 times. Total corrections were 34 corrections by board members. One thing I had forgotten was, and this is an honor, I'm diverting. The first time when we took our oath of office on December 7th, 2004, the first thing I did was have to correct the minutes, because it was written down that I had voted on every issue on the meeting before, when I wasn't even on the board. And so we had to fix that back to Patty Andreen. So maybe that's what set me up to, you know, I better read the minutes, because it's saying I'm voting on things I'm not on the board yet. And that was an odd error that I've never seen again, but I had forgotten about it. I want to look at just two quick times, the two recent times, where that shows perceptions can be quite different. And one was the local solar power company representative said that awarding the work to Chevron would be good for his local company, or whether it would be bad for his local company, which is just the exact opposite. And the minutes said one way, and I had heard it exactly the opposite way. So it's important to know which one was it, to check with everybody, what did you guys hear? Because decisions about solar power have not been made and are still on the table. This last one about the music program, which was the one that was like the straw, very few, much fewer, many fewer. So the high school program eventually, as those students got to high school, was the band was smaller. So that point didn't get in the minute. So I probably didn't say it well, which is pretty obvious I didn't. So is there a way, if you're trying to make a point, that you read the minutes and notice that it isn't there and you think it's important enough? And I know that's an issue with the board too, but let's say that it is an important point that you can make a correction at that. Would it be a correction to the minutes? Maybe Kim can jump in here. Because we did it one time, didn't we? Where we added, how does that work?
that's a good example for why we're trying to clarify this, I think.
Yeah.
If there's an error, as you've talked about, making a correction to, that I have perhaps not properly stated what was actually said at the meeting, then that's something that is properly made as a motion to correct the minutes. The instance about the music situation was one where I really kind of stood my ground, because your recollection is so closely tied to your intended point, and you simply didn't get those words out, and I can't interpret that in the minutes to state something and flesh it out when you really didn't say any of the words that you're using now to clarify that. So those are instances when I think if you read the minutes and you say, gee, that's not what I meant to say at all, then it would be a better thing for you to do either during your report at the subsequent meeting or during the discussion of the minutes to say, my point didn't get stated clearly, and I would like to restate it tonight, and this is my point. And so for that evening, we can make sure that the minutes include what you're trying to get out.
So that would be during minutes or during reports?
She's saying during the reports, either, if I can
intervene. Or minutes, she said.
Either one way of those opportunities would be clear, but the point is that it's for the current meeting, and you're merely taking the opportunity to say, I need to clarify something from last time because I didn't quite get out a total thought. You're not correcting the previous minutes. You're seeing that they don't quite communicate what you meant to communicate the last time.
And I think that would be an important option. If it's something that's still, you know, on the table.
That's part of what the board is discussing, not Ms. Holmes, is whether or not that would be an important option.
Yeah.
I'm saying I think it would be an important option.
Okay. Please put that in the minutes.
You don't have to. But by the way, anyway, I won't even go into that. I actually analyzed the correct words. I'm not going to talk about that. Let's see, where am I? So here would be, we're talking about what our expectations are about minutes. I'm going to summarize mine. My expectations are that the superintendent's assistant will continue to record the minutes in the way that she has. And Kim Holmes has expressed this view at the last meeting, that this way is the only way to cover discussion items that are not action items and is necessary to produce a consistent document. Isn't that pretty much what you said?
Then that's what I need, is a little clarification over the board's wishes so that we know how much detail these minutes are going to contain, because there isn't an action to be recorded there.
Okay. And this would be an expectation that the board will be open to discussing history of our own meetings, listening to ideas before judging, and acknowledging that district office staff and elected officials who represent community may not have the same perspective, paradigms, or priorities necessarily on any item, and that this comes out in hearing things differently. Sometimes we might need to clarify what happened among ourselves. Here's another expectation. Members will be mindful of time and essence in conversation. And I hear that strongly from board members. So I think that's important also. Yeah. An expectation is that communication will be important. And one thing I noticed in our minutes when I went through these is in our board decision from our board workshop on procedures and protocols on November 13, 2007, the minutes state, board members agreed that good communication is a key element to their success and discussed ways to allow for and improve communications while respecting differing viewpoints, unquote. And good communication is part of our strategic plan, isn't it? So in a year, actually, when we went to fact finding with the teachers, it might be a good time to continue with the communicative and thorough minutes that Kim Holmes developed so well and which we respectfully review as a board.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Actually, I brought this forward so that we could hopefully achieve some common ground on what these minutes should be. and we could start being much more efficient on our time. And here's the example. The one in question was a vote. And for the style of minutes that we've been using on this board for the 7-plus years that I've been on it and the many years that I've been watching it, were action minutes. So I guess, as charming a story as it was, I still missed the relevance of the whole addition about your children's music, Mrs. Dickinson's children's music experience, on an action item on a vote that was 6-1. And I would point you to the governance guidance from CSBA, which stresses that when a board takes action, that's it. We are acting as a board. It's fine that you disagreed, and, you know, there's the public discussion about that disagreement and all, but when the vote comes in 6-1, what is the relevance of that anecdote? And I will defer the rest of my comments if somebody wants to respond to that, but they don't have to. So I do agree that the non-action items present a greater challenge, and I do think that there should be an attempt to capture the flavor of the discussion. I don't think that it is as comprehensive as sometimes we try to make it to be, but I don't think that's really where we run into so many public and staff time. We spend a lot of time indulging ourselves and often are not very mindful of the folks who are making sacrifices while we do that indulgence. So that's really what I would like to see us accomplish. I think the minutes have been excellent. I don't mind anybody's attempts to modify or amend the minutes, but, you know, I also respect everybody's opportunity to oppose it. So anyway, that's my comments.
And I was going to backtrack just a little bit, except I think we're getting a offshore message from some Coast Guard vessel. Walt, can you translate that? Okay. Anyway, you know, briefly, I respect everybody's right on the board to discuss all issues that come before us that are related to public education. My point in bringing this up initially was that I don't believe the minutes are the appropriate place to have those conversations, because the minutes, as they're constituted, provide a synopsis of certain things, and Kim does a wonderful job of attempting to relay that information to the public, and that's what it is. I think where you have names or numbers or facts that can be corrected so they're accurate, that's one thing, but I think going through it and trying to have a continuing conversation about what was meant, for instance, I may have a sense that something I said was very important and it isn't in the minutes, so I could ask that the minutes be amended to include something I said that Kim didn't think was so important, and I'm, you know, offended by that also, and that's a problem area because it becomes so subjective. So my sense would be, if the board is happy with the minutes in terms of the information it provides to the community, I believe we should limit it to factual issues that are easily corrected, and if there are other matters that would shade information or provide more information that's important for the school community, we should do it at the report time and just say, here's my feeling about this, and this is why I feel that way, so there's a direct connection. I just feel that it's an unfair burden on anybody to continually have to justify or defend what was included or not included when it's more subjective. We're responsible for our subjective comments to the public, and I think we can make those at every meeting, and that's all I was hoping to achieve. Adrian, sure, go ahead.
I want to just comment on two quick things. One is, that's why I objected to those minutes, because it seemed like an anecdote about my children. The only reason I mentioned them was as credibility for having experience over a long term with a program that I didn't think was good enough. So my point was not to tell about my kids. So that's the... Okay, it was just to say something about the program. And what if what's in the minutes, though, is the exact opposite of what you think happened?
Well, I think you have to compare what the exact opposite is of. Is it a long dissertation, or is it a factual matter that's the exact opposite? Someone's name, someone's date, an occurrence. Because if it's a long matter with a whole anecdotal story, then maybe it's better to report that the next time and say, I believe this was the correct thing, and I want to have this on the record, but not to go into changing the
even if it's, because it's not like on my 13 times, it was only half the times about my own words. No, it was other people's, I mean, just perceptions of, you know, what appreciative. Okay, good.
No.
Good.
That's not the case. It wasn't disrespectful. It's just It's just the amount of work that's involved in changing something that's possibly subjective rather than factual, because we don't have a record that's actually factual to the nth degree where you can say that's not what was said. It's a matter of time, and it's a matter of product, and it's a matter of you. We have opportunities to clarify ourselves.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Any other comments?
I'm hearing that the minutes are pretty much okay the way they are, and that clarifications of things that don't appear in the minutes or even expansion of things that are in the minutes can be done through reports.
That's, I think, is everybody's comfortable with that? Okay, that's very good summation. And with the end of that discussion matter, we have the completion number, item number 12 of ballot for the CSBA Delegate Assembly, the runoff election, or as we call it, the Florida Chad thing. And what I would like to do to move this along is I would like to make a motion that the board vote in terms of the runoff election for Mark Buckman. If there's a second, we can entertain that, and then we can move to discussion. We have a second by Marilyn. In discussion?
Yep.
Walt?
Actually, I was going to suggest to the board that we vote for Tammy Gunther. And the reason why, or there's a couple of reasons why. First, I think by having this, by us voting for, if we have two CSBA representatives from the same school board, aren't we diminishing the reason why there's two CSBA representatives? Secondly, I know Tammy Gunther. She's an excellent board member, involved parent, and this has nothing to do with Mark, as you know, or he does have to do with Mark. I think it would be good. We already have a professional education administrator as one of our CSBA representatives. And I think I'd like to see the perspective from a parent, and I know Mark's a parent as well, but Mark is a professional education consultant, and I think I'd like to see a little more diverse input to CSBA. And I also think it would send a message of inclusiveness to the other school districts that we don't want to monopolize the CSBA representation. Anyway, and I'm also running for the most popular school board member on the board. I hope everybody votes for me, too.
Thank you, Walt. Adrian?
Well, wait, is this like two motions on the table all at once? No,
there's just one motion, and we're just commenting.
Oh, okay.
Discussing.
They're both wonderful people and qualified. That's obvious. I think if we all vote for the same people we voted for last time, it's still going to be tied. And I understand that is that you that's going to break the tie if it ties in?
I'm not sure what my role on this would be yet. I don't believe that every district in Region 9C voted.
Oh, that's why it's. Oh, yeah. I see. I wanted to say that impressive as your resume is and your statement, there's one thing that was impressive about Tammy.
Director representing all of Region 9, which is all of our area, San Luis Obispo, San Benito, Monterey, and Santa Cruz counties. And so the fact that I would have to disagree with you, Walter, the fact that I'm a CSBA director does not, I think it changes my relationship to the delegate assembly and the votes of the different regional delegates. So,
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Are you or are you not our district's representative to CSBA? Our district, the larger district.
I am the regional director for Region 9, which is the four Central Coast counties. And then within those within the regions, there are different regional directors and as well as a regional county director, and that's a guy from Santa Cruz County.
So do we get to replace you and have another?
I am being replaced. I am not. I'm. I am a director, and the directors are chosen by the delegate assembly and nominated by the regional delegates. So my seat on the delegate assembly is gone.
And is that what Mark would be filling?
Mark would be filling my seat on the delegate assembly. That is correct.
Oh, good. Okay. Then yes. Forget everything I said.
Ask Chris a question about his
yeah,
job.
Of course, about my job.
Do you have to be a school board member to have the job that you have?
In order to be a member of the California School Board Association, you must be a school board member, except in the case of the past president, who is then able to attend CSBA functions, but is not able to vote on anything. So active membership in CSBA requires election on a local school board.
And I was just going to add, I know Tammy also, and I think your comments are well taken. I would really appreciate Mark's involvement with this, and that's why I would support it, because Mark has a lot of political acumen that comes with years of working in the political process and the educational process, and I know in past experience it's very helpful in Sacramento to have somebody who knows how things are working, so you can call into question certain things that aren't right, but they will tell you they're right. And I think that background is imperative for someone who's as involved as Mark is in education. And any other comments? Mark?
Adrian, I would just point out that if you look at my answer to the same question, it ends with CSBA is not just about holding meetings, but actually takes action. Advocacy policies in Golden Bell, the word advocacy.
Thank you. Any other comments before we take the vote? Seeing none, all in favor for indicating on the runoff, Mark Buckman, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you very much. That's closed. Okay, we have 6-0 with one abstention. Now we're going to move into the action consent portion of the agenda. And I'll read down the list, and if anyone would like an item pulled, please indicate so. Item number 13, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 14, acceptance of donations. Item 15, disposition of surplus property. 20, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. First item pulled is disposition of surplus property by Mark.
Hi. Thanks. This is to my good friend Russell, who's not... No, not upset with me tonight at all. I attended an open house where there was discussion about disposal of equipment at that school in a prior year, and the comment that one of the teachers made was, "Is it was so great we were able to take the older computers, which most of them are only 4 years old, and put them in a room and." Children had access, students had access to them, and were able to take them home. And I'm wondering if is that sort of part of the standard procedure?
Yeah, we still try and make the obsolete and unused computers available for families who wish to acquire them.
Okay. Then I'll move approval of item 15.
So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman. Do we have a second on item 15? I'll second it. A motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by myself. All in favor of item 15, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Passes 7-0. Item 16 by Mr. Unger.
I apologize for not talking to Mr. Halfman prior to this, but I was wondering about the $2,000 shredder and what we're looking at in terms of that and why we would need that and why we wouldn't want to go for a shredding service, for example.
Does anybody wish to comment upon that? No comment. Mr. Miller?
Just in all seriousness. Yeah. In all seriousness, that would be a question that Mr. Halfman would have to answer. He has his ability to purchase those kinds of items, and we'll get you an answer on that one. I don't know why the size or the shredder was chosen.
I mean, we're not talking about the White House tapes here.
I hope not.
I would like to support this. And I would like to, I don't know if it's possible to pull out the $2,000 for the shredder until we hear back from you, if would it be possible to amend this request? Okay, then I'll make a motion that we approve the $11,712 for items 1 through 4 under the general fund requests, and that we get information back from the adult school fund request from Mr. Halfman about his request for a shredder.
We have a motion as set forth by Mr. Unger. Is there a second by Ms. Rogers? All in favor? Excuse me.
Aye.
I'm sorry. Wait. I apologize. Is there any discussion about that motion that was just made? Seeing none, all in favor? Oh, sorry. There is a...
I just said, isn't this already purchased? No. Oh.
Okay. Any other comments? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now we're into the advance agenda portion of the meeting. Are there any items or any requests that any board members wish to make about regarding advance agenda items or Friday package items or related matter?
Mr. Spetafor, I would like to ask that we put an item on the advance agenda to discuss.
We got off onto... you know, what's blocked on in the internet. And I know we already just recently had an agenda item, so I don't know if we need an agenda item on this. But the thing we were discussing is that if everything's so protected, you know, how do students learn to... we need students to be the filters themselves in this big world of all that goes on. So in the educational setting, if you run across an image, for instance, or something, you know, you're there with a trained professional educator to help you process this. And things that come up like that, you learn what you think about it and how to become your own filter instead of just blocking everything for kids and then sending them off to college or wherever they're going. And I just wondered, I guess what I'm asking is, maybe could we find out more what the consensus is about the educators regarding, like, blocking Google images, for instance. At Arroyo Grande High School, we have that, and certain images are blocked, and that's the way this teacher said it used to be here. It's not like it's unlimited access.
Right.
It wasn't ever that way.
Well, we have explored ways to filter the inappropriate images or whatever it is so that there's still some access and usability on some sites, and in some cases we can do it, in some cases we can't. And in terms of the consensus, it's more of a community, I think, issue. Our board policy says that we have a system in place to protect students from access to inappropriate images. These systems have instant and very easy access to pornographic images and things like that that without blocking it, we can't protect the kids from, in our opinion. So... I guess the short answer is we do have images that block at times, and we're able to do that, and sometimes we aren't, but we always try to keep the viability of the product there, but protecting the kids from other things.
But would you be willing to just find out if the teachers think that it's too restrictive, the kind of things
they do think it's too restrictive?
Yeah,
well,
I could maybe think it is too.
Yeah. I mean, they would rather have instant access to what they want.
You know, the dilemma on that whole issue isn't so much protecting the kids, although it's our primary mission. It's that the board policy requires us to block any pornographic image whatsoever. So if you're interested in loosening up the restrictiveness of that policy, that's the board's policy and the board's prerogative. But at this current time, the policy we operate under is no pornography can appear on our system. And so we block it. And if we don't block it, then we're in a violation of board policy. So, you know, it's not about being restrictive to teachers. It's about a board policy which requires us to take a certain action.
I'm just wondering why, you know, like at AGHS, we can do Google images and certain things are blocked out.
There are certain levels of images that you can block. You can make them very protected to least no protection whatsoever. And at this moment, we have Google restrictive. That's the bottom line.
Well, and I think it's more than board policy, isn't it? Isn't it one of the agreements that we have with accepting federal funding is that we'll have pornographic websites blocked and that our children won't have access to those things? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Adrian? I just want to make it clear we're not recommending that pornographic sites be unblocked. But we do have very broad blocking, and I think it's frustrating at times that some really good educational materials are blocked at the same time, just so we all realize that. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, with all due respect, we don't have really broad blocking. We have very specific blocking, and the blocking is in the nature of board policy. So we're not out there trying to censor or block anything. It just is what it is.
Any other items that the board wishes to bring up on agenda? Seeing none, I think we're at a point in time where adjourning is probably a good idea. Thank you, everybody. I know you're happy.